Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Nikki and I'm an alcoholic. I'll be your host for the month of April. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms on aagrapevine.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We're glad you're all here, especially newcomers. If you're new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. As your chairperson, and I get to choose the excerpts, so bear with me. These ones are a little bit longer, but they hit home for me this week. Oh, first, the daily quote is, "By applying the principles of the program, I've gained my freedom. Freedom to be myself, to like myself as I am, to become whatever it is that my higher power has planned for me, one day at a time. Freedom to live the type of life I'm most comfortable with, to love and to laugh. Above all, an alcoholic, Toledo, Ohio, September 1982, in our own words, stories of young AAs in recovery." You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you'll find it on the Grapevine app every morning. And this is an excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine. "I was shocked. All my life I had held a grudge against my father for something I believed he had never done and which I had never discussed with him. I learned an invaluable lesson. The truth we believe is not always the truth of what really happened. Perception matters. So today, when I write my annual grudge list, I first stop and ask myself if I know something happened or if I just believe something happened. How easy it is to accidentally distort the past. If I'm going to start looking at my feelings and my part in my resentments to remove them, I need to first ensure they aren't a figment of my imagination." That's from Alex M. in Louisville, Kentucky. Let's start today's meeting with a reading from the Big Book, page 281 in the fourth edition, The Missing Link. He looked at everything as the cause of his unhappiness, except alcohol. "When I was 8 or 9 years old, life suddenly became very difficult. Feelings began to emerge that I did not understand. Depression crept into my life as I started to feel alone, even in crowded rooms. In fact, life didn't make much sense to me at all. It's hard to say what sparked all of this, to pinpoint one fact or event that changed everything forever. The fact of the matter was, I was miserable from early on in my life. It was all very confusing. I remember isolating on the playground, watching all the other children laughing and playing and smiling and not feeling like I could relate. I felt different. I didn't feel as if I was one of them. Somehow I thought I didn't fit in." This will be a two-speaker meeting. There'll be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than to compare your story with theirs. So today we'll start with my first speaker, Hank.
Thanks, Nikki. Hi, everybody. My name's Hank, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm so glad you're here, Basha, and so glad to be with you. And Nikki, thanks for this invitation, and just a shout out to the Grapevine for putting on this podcast. I think it's incredible the outreach efforts that the Grapevine is making to carry the message. And just a little not secret, Nikki's a non-trustee director of the Grapevine, and I know what you guys are doing is wonderful for the Grapevine, for the fellowship, and for all of us. So thank you for your service, Nikki. Yeah, when Nikki sent us these readings beforehand, and Nikki, by the way, give me a little heads up when I'm running out of time, okay? Thank you. Nikki circulated these readings ahead of time, and I read them over a few times. And, you know, one of the things about AA is it's not, to me anyway, it's not an intellectual program. You know, we speak the language of the heart. And sometimes it takes a while for me to get from my head to my heart. And so I was glad to have a chance to kind of sit with these readings a little bit and, you know, ask myself what my heart had to say about them. And the message that I got was that these readings are about perceptions. And, you know, the first reading from the Grapevine, the guy talks about, is this just my perception or is it true? And then in the reading from the Big Book, the guy talks about how he perceived the world as hostile and confusing and depressing. And I can identify with all of this personally. Certainly I can say this. When I first got to AA, the fun was gone, you know, my life, my perception of my life was horrific. It was a disaster. My now ex-wife had invited me not to return home. My professional career was in tatters. And most painful of all, my kids wanted nothing to do with me. And, I'd gone from a great deal of economic success and thinking I was one of these masters of the universe, you know, driving around in a fancy car and wearing fancy clothes. And pretty much all of that was gone. And I ended up in what we were talking about before the meeting, the second last house on a dead end road. And there was vodka in the freezer and beer in the refrigerator, and boy, was I glad they were there. And, you know, life was bleak. My perception of life was bleak. And, you know, today, a little bit later this month, on April 26th, if I don't take a drink between now and April 26th, I'll celebrate 15 years away from the drink. And you know, I live in that same cottage. And what I now realize is I live in a beautiful place. I it's spring. I live in Western New York, and it's spring in Western New York. And I'm looking out of my window. I'll just give you just a quick peek. You know, the grass is green, the daffodils are yellow, the sky is blue, and life is beautiful, you know? And so when I think about alcoholism as a disease of perception, and my perceptions when I got here were very, very bleak. And I don't think, you know, as I've gone through recovery, and as very, very slowly this power that we connect to in AA is penetrating into my heart, which is really, you know, that I'm an old guy, you know, one of the things I grew up with was the Rolling Stones, and one of the, you know, the, you know, Mick Jagger is one of the great philosophers of all time, you know, and one of Mick's songs was called Heart of Stone. And I had a heart of stone. In fact, I had a soul of stone. At least that's the way it felt. And one of the things that you told me in AA which has taken me a long time to be able to begin to experience. No matter what my thoughts are, it's the experience that counts. And you told me that deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And you told me that our connection with that power that's deep down inside us, you went even further. You told me that we have to search fearlessly, but he is there. And in the last analysis, it's only there, deep down inside of me, that he may be found. And you told me in that same, this is page 55 of the big book, you told me that my connection with that power is obscured by pomp, calamity, and worship of other things. And we use other words to describe that: restless, irritable, and discontented, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That's the bleakness that I lived in. That's the bleakness that are described in these readings today. And what it does is it obscures us from what page 55 calls the great reality, deep down inside every man, woman, and child. And the truth is that we live in an incomprehensibly wonderful world, and we're part of the great reality. We can't not be part of the great reality, but our mind tells us that we are separate. Our mind tells us that we are alone. Our mind tells us that we are isolated. That's how I perceived the world. I grew up in an alcoholic home. It was an abusive, seemingly loveless environment. As a little kid, I know today that it's not my fault. It's not, we call it a defect of character, but it's not like I'm a bad person that I felt that way. It was a legitimate way for a little child to react to the environment in which I was raised. But what it did was it created a dysfunctional personality that blocked me from the ability to communicate, to exchange love and sincerity and honesty with the world around me. I was just scared. You guys have shown me a path to heal that, so that that spirit that's deep down inside of every man, woman, and child can begin to shine through, bringing healing to me and allowing me to share that with the world. And Nikki, I think that's all I've got. Thank you. God bless.
Thanks, Hank. Well, I have a question that it's just rhetorical, so you don't need to answer. But if you have to be an old guy to know heart of stone, what does that make me? And I can identify with so many of the things. And I'm fortunate enough to call you a good friend, so I know this stuff that you're talking about. And I think that the love that we bring to Alcoholics Anonymous spreads when we allow it to. And that's one of the huge lessons that you've been instrumental in teaching me. So Hank, thanks for being here and sharing. And I'm honored and excited that you'd be here with us. And I see that your sponsor's on, so he'll call me if you're lying. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store or on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. Check out Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all episodes. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube too. I am going to now introduce the second speaker of today, Meisha.
Thank you, Nikki. Hi, everyone. My name is Meisha. I'm an alcoholic. I am grateful that Nikki asked me to be here today. My sobriety date is August 23rd, 2017. I got sober in Connecticut, where I currently live. A little bit about me. I was born in Brooklyn, New York in the 1980s. And I feel like my story of alcoholism, I often say this, like started before I was born. Like the scene had been set. It was like made perfectly for just like an alcoholic to be like born into. I look at the reading that Nikki provided, The Missing Link, and I think like, oh, I could have written that. Like, you know, and I thought I was so terminally unique. I hear that a lot in the rooms, like the terminal uniqueness. I thought I was just so different from everyone else. No one could possibly understand where I'm coming from. And here this person is writing this story that I say that I could have written myself. Apparently I'm not unique, right? But I was born into a, in a sense, it was an alcoholic household. It was a household that was touched by alcoholism. My grandfather, my mother's father, was an alcoholic, untreated alcoholic. And that basically mean that he wasn't around a lot. And then when he was around, he was causing like chaos and insanity. And then that was rubbing off on his children and my grandmother. And so my mother, she was a teenage mother when she had me, dropped out of high school. And my father was, you know, he was a young adult, very young adult, like barely. And so they were never together as far as I can remember. And I was raised with my grandmother and my mother. But at some point, my mother also left that home, that apartment that we shared. My father had another family. And I felt like, well, who's there for me? Who is here to love me? And so a part of my life was just, or a long, not a part, a huge part of my life was me trying to figure out where I fit in. Like, I just wanted to be like you. I wanted to be normal. I didn't want to stand out. I wanted to just be a part of the crowd. I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be noticed. That's it. That's all I wanted. Right. And so I feel like a part of my drinking was me chasing that feeling, chasing that being loved. I noticed that those of my schoolmates, and this was in middle school, those of my schoolmates that drank and did all the things, they got like attention and they were a part of a crowd. So maybe if I drink, maybe if I do all the things, maybe I can be a part of that crowd too. Maybe I can be accepted. And by this time, you know, like I felt so terminally unique. My name is Meisha. At this point, I had moved to Virginia from New York City and I had a New York accent and people were like making fun of me because I had a New York accent. So I was like, nope, can't have that anymore. I have to get rid of that. Freckles on my face, like just so many things. Why can't I just be like named Nicole and like, you know, have like no freckles and like, just, I just want to be normal. And that's, you know, so that's what I was chasing, that what I thought was normalcy. So yeah, like, so then it was normal to drink at like the age of 11 or 12 in middle school, because that's what everyone else was doing. One of the things that I'm reminded of is a part in the Big Book that says liquor was but a symptom. So yeah, I was an alcoholic before I touched a drop of liquor. Like I don't remember ever having like a carefree, like when I look at like children and I see them playing and laughing and frolicking and using their imagination and doing all of those things. I look back at my like childhood and I was like, I was never like that. And I'm sure people are like, are you sure you were never like? No, I'm sure I was never like that. Right. Like my alcoholism had already kicked in without a drop of alcohol. I found the alcohol and that became a solution to my problem until it became a problem and it until it became a problem in itself. Right. So alcohol is my solution. Social anxiety. I have a ton of social anxiety. So what are you doing when you have social anxiety? You drink. You drink before the social interaction, you drink during the social interaction, you drink after the social interaction. That's how you get through life, right? What do you do when when you're sad? You drink, right? Like what else is there to do? What do you do when you're happy? You drink. What do other people do? It's so funny because like now I'm realizing I was becoming the thing that I hated. I wanted to be a part of. So I was drinking, I was drinking, I was drinking. Now, if you didn't drink like me, you were not a part of my circle. You couldn't be because you didn't drink. So like, what good were you? Like, how could you have fun without drinking? Like, I couldn't see how to live life without drinking. It was my answer to everything. I had a complicated relationship with this goes back to some of the reading too that Nikki sent and Nikki read earlier in terms of the holding a grudge against my father. Oh boy, I know how to hold a grudge, right? So, holding a grudge against my mother for not loving me, kind of abandoning me at a certain point in my life, holding a grudge against my father for going on and having another family and like focusing on that family. And like, I held some grudges. And when my father got sick, he got just super, super duper ill very quickly. I didn't know how to deal with that because I had all these like unresolved things that were going through my head. And how do you deal with any problem as an alcoholic? Well, you just drink, right? Like that's how you deal with it. So instead of like just trying to figure out like how to spend time with my father in his final days, I was drinking. I was drinking during my father's final days. And I was drinking during his like funeral. And so much so we're like, one of my sister's friends said to me, doesn't even know me very well, but said something like, wow, you're surely drinking a lot. And I was, of course, self-justification, self-righteous. Well, if your father just died, you would be drinking too. And like, bam, mic drop, right? Yeah. So then I just continued to drink and I continued to live into my alcoholism. And for me, what that looked like was just kind of quitting my job because I figured life was too short. Life is too short to do things that you hate. I guess like work, I don't know, like get money, I don't know, pay bills. So life is too short to do things that you hate. So just what can I do? Like I was convinced that my drinking was somehow like more like fancy than the average person's drinking. So I was like, maybe I'll just be a sommelier. I can be a sommelier, like I'm like, I can be snobby. I'll just be a sommelier. Or a bartender or both. I don't know. Something. Like, what can you do where you can drink all of the time? That's what I want to do. Like, I want to be able to drink for a living. Like, how can I do that? And the funny thing is, I actually like found a job that was pretty close to drinking for a living, but it required social interaction. I was a food tour guide, and that social interaction, it's just so like weird how like you do things that like it makes sense at the time, and then you're like, what? That doesn't even make any, like, I have social anxiety. Why on earth would I want to be a tour guide? So in order to make it through those tours, of course I had to, you guessed it, drink before, drink after. My first day on the job, I got so drunk that my boss had to call my husband to come and pick me up. And I still had a job the next day. So I was like, yes, awesome. I've arrived. But then I look at this, once again, I go back to this reading from earlier, which is the missing link, right? Still having, like, being able to drink all I wanted to drink and do these things, I still felt like something was missing. And I was blaming everything. Well, my mother, my father, like, they're the reason that I am the way that I am. And I'm not saying that, there wasn't stuff that could have been better in my childhood. But now that I'm in my 40s, like, I have a responsibility to myself to take accountability for my actions, like, as an adult. But something was always, like, missing. Like, what am I looking for? Something's not right here. I thought I should be happy, but I'm not happy. And then, so with that being said, one of my friends encouraged me to go to this personal development course in New York City. And I went, and during the personal development course, it came out that I was an alcoholic. Like I said that out loud. It was my voice that said it. But funny enough, one of my best friends in the world had just told me a few months before that she suspected that I was an alcoholic. And I'm like, I'm not an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic. Like I can't, like, it's not about me, it's about you. So deflection, all of that other stuff. I'm not an alcoholic. So when I said that I was an alcoholic at this personal development course, it was like, well, that's weird. Where'd that come from? And I think this was like the beginning of things happening in my life that I just didn't understand. And honestly, I don't need to understand a lot of it. I just need to be willing, and I just need to do something moving forward, right? I didn't understand why I said that. I didn't understand why I went to my first AA meeting a couple of days right after that personal development class was done. I didn't understand that, why I came back that second day to a meeting. Because that first meeting was like, they were talking in languages that I didn't even understand. They were saying, oh, we're going to read out of the 12 and 12. We're going to read the tradition, of the month. We're going to do this. Okay, what are you talking about? I just want to learn how to drink like a lady. Like, please, just like, where's the book? Where's the class that tells me how to drink like a lady? Isn't that what AA is about? I kept coming. So yeah, that was fortunate. So I kept coming, and I kept doing the things, even though nothing made sense to me. What is a sponsor, right? Like, why do I need a sponsor? You're sponsoring me in this program, like a debutante ball, or like, what is this? Like, I don't really get this. What is it? And but I just kept doing the things that made sense. I finally got a sponsor through sarcasm and defiance, and we started to work the steps. And I actually have a Grapevine book with me, Take Me to Your Sponsor. This is a Best Jokes and Cartoons book from the AA Grapevine. And I saw one of the jokes in there, and it reminded me of, like, how I used to work with my sponsor. It says, not what I had in mind. A sponsor walked into a meeting one evening to see his sponsee reading the big book. I'm happy to see you reading the book, Joe, the sponsor said. I'm looking for loopholes, Joe responded. Bob M. of Green Valley, Arizona, March 2015. And that's kind of how it was working with my sponsor at first. Like, I kept like arguing everything. Everything was an argument because I just wasn't like, I wasn't comprehending the fact that like this was a disease. This was something that I had that I wasn't, you know, if I wanted what you have in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm not drinking again. I was planning on my like next drink. Like, oh yeah, y'all are going to teach me how to drink. And then in August of 2018, at my next birthday, I will be drinking again. So that's like, that all made sense in my head. Luckily, once again, I kept coming and then I actually started working the steps and things started to click. Life got better. Life got better fast. It was so awesome. I didn't think that like anything could go wrong. And then 4 months into my sobriety, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And one of the reasons I feel like I even found the cancer and I even pursued it was because I had this program. Like my mind was clearer, my body was clearer. Yes, at 4 months, like I didn't understand it. I didn't have to understand it. I don't have to intellectualize that. I don't have to intellectualize my higher power. I just have to believe that my higher power is out there and that my higher power is leading me toward good and toward altruism and away from egoism. I had 4 months in the program and all of a sudden I had like this fellowship around me that was like coming around and like helping me during one of the most difficult times of my life, right? Through chemo, through a bilateral mastectomy, through just feeling sick and like I couldn't go to a meeting. So they're like, oh, we'll bring a meeting to you. We'll bring you food. We'll cook for you, right? Like, you know, my husband, I guess he could have cooked for me, but his idea of like a meal is like hot dogs. So like that wasn't going to be sustainable. And they came around and I came around. One of the first things that my sponsor asked me when I was diagnosed with cancer, she was my first call, right? She was my first call. One of the things that she asked me is, what would you like to do? And I said, let's keep working the steps. I was going from step two to step three at that point in time. And then I was like, that does not feel like a coincidence, like at all. Doesn't feel like a coincidence. When I was feeling okay, like I was doing whatever I could to like soak in all of the AA program, working with my sponsor, giving rides to people. Like I probably shouldn't even be giving rides to people because I'm not a very good driver, right? Like, so like that probably should not be my service, right? Like is making coffee, giving rides to people. That probably shouldn't be my service because like it'll suck. But like, you know, anyway, so this is what I was doing when I was feeling better during that difficult time in my life. And man, oh man, did it really put perspective, I think is what kind of like Hank said earlier, like my perspective shifted. It's not all about me. It's not all about me. It's about us. It's about like, this is a we program. Not one time in the steps does it say I or me. It says we, our, like this is, we do this all together. This is how we're here. So after that whole ordeal, I wanted to figure out a way to give back to this program that saved my life. And so I started being of service in different ways. I became a GSR. And of course, like by the time I rotated out of that position, I was like, all right, now I know how to do a GSR position. Maybe I should be a GSR again. No, that's not how it works. Okay. I became a DCM. Our area 11 Connecticut is undergoing redistricting in a lot of our districts right now. And so I was able to work on I was able to chair a redistricting committee during its like first iteration. And I was able to, I should have rotated out, but I became a DCM of a newer district. And I just loved it. Like I loved it. It was like a little home group. I love what service was giving me, right? Like service was giving me this opportunity to practice the principles in all my affairs. And service was giving me an opportunity to continue to take a deeper look at myself. And if you would have told me like, hey, like Maisha, you have social anxiety, you know how you have to like drink to do all of these things, but like, you're going to be a DCM and then you're going to stand and you're going to stand for an area position and you're going to get an area position as area chair, chairing something, like, okay, that's weird. Like why, how is that possible? Right. But I have social anxiety, but I have to drink in order to get in front of people. And my higher power says, no, you don't. No, you don't. Like what I do today, what do I pray? I pray, my favorite prayer is the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. I pray that like I have something useful to give to others, to offer. It's not about me. I pray that I can, you know, realize the character defects when they pop up. There's another joke in here that I have. This one is a woman holding a box and she's with, it looks like her husband sitting down in a chair. The box says defects. And then, uh-oh, you can't really see that very well. The box says defects. And the husband says, yeah, I was going to hang on to those. So whenever I'm like, yeah, I want to hang on to that character defect, my higher power is like, well, you know what you should do instead? Be of service. Be of service. Work on those character defects, grow. And I am so fortunate because like I am going into my ninth year sober and I'm becoming a person that I don't necessarily like recognize. Which is like in a good way, right? I'm becoming a person that I don't necessarily recognize. And I don't really understand what my higher power has in store for me. I don't need to understand it. I just have to be willing and able. So willing to keep coming. And with that, that's all. Thank you.
Maisha, thank you so much. If the participants who are listening today or on the podcast, if you don't have the kind of friends that I have on this screen, keep coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and you too will find these lovely people. So I love the grapevine for all kinds of reasons, but one of them is because the grapevine was the one source I had to sobriety when I first got sober in a very rural area. And I'm a little bit of a researcher. So whenever I read something, I try to find something in the big book that connects it. And I don't know if these two stories connected for anybody else, but the kicking of the rocks and really feeling that loneliness and feeling like I don't fit in. When you were talking about that, Maisha, I could really identify with where do I fit in? What happens? You know, I always wanted my insides to feel like people's outsides looked like they felt. And somebody said that one day and I could really identify. And I assure you that being named Nicole does not keep you from being an alcoholic. So that it doesn't matter what the name is. And, you know, really identifying what's fancied and what's real as I'm doing my work in Alcoholics Anonymous has been an AFGO, another fantastic growth opportunity. So please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it's ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professionals, community, or public information work. And I'm going to ask Hank to close us out, if you would, please.
Thanks, Nikki. Thanks, Maisha. That was a beautiful share. And thanks to the grapevine and thanks to everyone who's with us in the meeting today. And I was thinking, Maisha was talking about how this is a we program and we're all in this together. You know, we're part of this we're part of this podcast, we're part of this open meeting, and all of us, alcoholics or non-alcoholics, we're all here together. And, you know, one of AA's three legacies is the legacy of unity. And I thought, we're really feeling that unity in a new way now, modem to modem or face to face, right? And so I thought, let's close with the Declaration of Unity. This we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on AA unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come.
Thanks, Hank. And remember, everybody, only you can make sure you have a great day. I can't help myself.